Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 304, recorded September 6th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello! Here we are, once again, to supply your fishy needs.
Alright, so who have we got today?
We have Sam in Minnesota, Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Mick in Carnforth, UK.
And?
And you.
And me.
And you. Do you want to go first?
I have a story.
Okay.
Okay, I'll go first. All right, so as you may recall, I've been cycling a tank for quite a while now, and the tank was looking good, all ready to go, and I had ordered a group of five Neolamprologus similis, 10 guinea geese shell dwellers, to pick up from a wholesaler that is about an hour from our house. I did so because we were already going about halfway there and figured we could, you know, we talked about it and figured out how we could save gas by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And because this was the only place that had them that I knew
this
of.
This is about an hour away.
Yeah, an hour away. And I didn't know of any other place to get them. And so that's what we're going to do. At any rate, I ordered them, paid for them online.
Several weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Paid for them online, and everything was good. I was in communication with the wholesaler by email several times and said, is this date okay? And they said, yeah, that'll be fine, and everything like that. And so I went down to pick them up. When I got there, I was going to have to stay there a while because of the way scheduling was. I needed to go pick Kelly up at a certain time from where she was, and I didn't really have anything else that I could do in the meantime, and so I was going to just go around and take a tour of the facilities, which I did. They have some amazing Malawi cichlids down there. I mean, the colors have to be seen to be believed, because I may have spoken about this before, but they have a flow-through system from a spring that comes out of the ground at like 78 degrees. It's perfect water. It's almost the same as like Lake Malawi. Essentially, as it comes out, it's got that same type of hardness and everything. The conditions are perfect for Malawi cichlids, so they just have it on a flow through, and the rate at which the water is exchanged, it's like getting a complete water change, 100% water change, four times a day. So you can imagine these fish are amazing. And I just enjoyed walking around like that for a while, and when I was done, I came over and said, okay, well, I have these Neolamprologus similis that I was going to pick up. And they're like, oh, similis, okay. And so he went back to get them, and he's like, oh, we don't have any similis. And I said, really? Here's my receipt. And, you know, they were very nice about it, but they realized that there had been some miscommunication somewhere. And so they said, oh, it's fine. You can either pick whatever other fish you want for the amount that you paid, or we can refund your money. And they said, we may have some at our breeding facility, because this is really their, you know, their wholesaling outlet, and they opened it to the public
on
Saturdays. Yeah, so they can just come in and buy things, or you can order things and pick them up on Saturdays, but most of what they do is just shipping things out from that particular facility, and their breeding facility somewhere else. Anyway, they said, we may have some there, you can call and we can see what we can do, you know, set that up if you want to, or you can just get a refund. So I thought, well, I have a couple of hours here. I think by that time I had about two and a half hours do something in, and I figured, well, we'll see what we can do. I'm going to go up to the pet store that we used to go to, because I know they sometimes have Neolamprologus multifasciatus, which is very similar to the similis that I was planning on getting, and also they happen to be less aggressive, because I really like the coloring of similis more. They're quite similar, but they're just a little different. One's, the similis is kind of a light color with dark stripes, and multifasciatus is a light color with a dark color with light stripes, or vice versa. I can't remember now that I'm talking about it. I'm all confused. But anyway, I like the effect of the similis a little better.
You can just ask Marty the zebra.
Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, well, I'll go up and see what the deal is there. I know they have a colony up there. They are usually not for sale, but I'll just go check. And that's kind of on my way to coming back anyway.
Close to pick me up.
To pick Kelly up. So went up there, and I talked to the clerk there, and she said, well, I'm not selling them yet, but we maybe, and look, I'll take down your information, and we'll give you a call. this was not one of the people I knew really well when I was down at, when I would go to that store. I knew the owners a little better than that. So she, but she did say, "Oh yeah, I remember talking to you, and we'll put your name down, and you'll be the first to know when they come on sale." I said, "Okay, cool." But then I remembered that we have a local classifieds section I had seen when I had, after I had already, you know, sent the money in for my Simlas, I had seen an ad for someone who was trying to sell some multifasciatus, a group of them. He said he had ocelotus and multifasciatus, and they were each preventing the other from breeding because they were in the same tank. And he said, so I want to get the ocelotus to breed, so I need to get rid of the multis. And at the time I saw that, and I said, oh, well, I've already bought the Simlas, but I'll just send him an email or a message or something. And I did, and I said, if my deal falls through, I'll contact you. And he said, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Who knows what will happen in a week? Because it was a week before. I had seen that a week before. It was time for me to pick up the fish. So he had already, you know, we'd already communicated. And so I sent him a text, and I was waiting for the text. And it was almost time to pick Kelly up, and I still hadn't heard back. And I was just thinking, oh, no, this is not going to work, and I've been doing all this work for nothing, and this is sad. But then, just as I was going to pick Kelly up, I got there, or right before I got there, I don't remember, something like that, but I got a text, and when I stopped the car...
Well, I have to understand, getting a text for us is a little bit trickier than for normal people.
That's true.
Because our phones, we don't have, like, a data plan or anything. They only work if you manage to get Wi-Fi somewhere. We just have a free texting app that works if there's Wi-Fi. So when he's driving around the Salt Lake Valley trying to do this, it's like, oh, can I find some place that has Wi-Fi I can jump on?
And of course I can't,
it's not password
can't
Wi-Fi.
Check the text while I'm driving, so I have to stop driving and do that. And so at
it
one
just
point,
adds another layer of...
A wrinkle of difficulty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I finally got... stopped somewhere, got a text, looked at it, and it said, you have, oh yeah, sorry, I've been asleep the last few hours because I work nights, and so sorry I didn't get your text. And I sent him a text back saying, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you up. And we, you know, started communicating, but it was kind of slow because I would go through gaps where I couldn't check it because I was driving and or I wasn't in a Wi-Fi network, both of them, you know. And so finally, he says, we were able to communicate that he had them, and I finally got his address and drove over there with Kelly. I had to go pick her up first because it was time to pick her up. And I said, can we go down and get him there like 10 minutes away? And she said, yes, in the wrong direction, but still. so we drove down the 10 minutes, found the place. It was a little confusing. But we found it and got there, and he handed me a bag full of shells. And he said, there are at least 8 in there. There might be more. And there you go. Hopefully one of my ocelotus isn't in those shells too, because I couldn't really tell because they all dashed for cover when I came to catch them. So I brought the bag home sight unseen, carefully lowered the shells down into the tank. I already had shells in there, but these were just additional shells, you know. Lowered them down with my long planting tweezers. And over the next hour or two, the fish started popping out. And there are indeed 8 of them in there. One of them is immature and looks... like almost like a balloon molly in its body shape, as if it has the same sort of mutation that a balloon molly does. It makes its spine shorter and kind of makes it a little rounder. I'm not certain about that, but that's kind of what it looks like to me. And one of the males seems to have something going on with his mouth. He doesn't seem to close his mouth completely. And I don't know if he got injured or if this is a congenital defect or whatever, but all the rest of them seem to be in really good shape. And even the ones that look a little strange still seem to be doing well, so... we'll see how this goes. What I'm kind of hoping is that I'll be able to get a couple of multifasciatus from that pet store when they call me, and I'll just get like a couple of females to put in my colony that'll be from a different bloodline. But at any rate, after all that work and setting up a tank specifically for Simlas, which are a bit more aggressive, so I put like a rock work structure in the center of the tank to create a visual barrier, and everything based on the needs of the Simlas. Now I have multifasciatus, which are not as aggressive. And although I regret not getting the color of the Simlas, I am happy that I'm going to have some fairly docile colony breeders. They're still territorial. It's still interesting to watch them have territorial disputes. They're just a lot less likely to kill each other, which I'm excited about. So there you go. I have video footage of them that I'll be posting soon. So you can check out my new colony of Tanganyikan shell dwellers, something I've never done before. It's been on my bucket list for years, and now I've got them, and they seem to be doing really well.
It's exciting. Okay. Shall we go to Sam in Minnesota?
Yes.
Okay. He says, so, Russ and Kelly, I've got a question on how to breed nerite snails. I have one tiger blood nerite snail, and I just want to see if it was possible if I could breed him or her. Please tell me everything.
Okay. Well, this is a great question. Short answer is nerites don't breed in freshwater. You probably already knew that. When I say no, don't breed in freshwater, I mean that you can't keep nerites and their eggs in freshwater and expect to get any babies out of them. They will lay eggs, of course, which you probably also already knew. The eggs need brackish to full marine strength seawater somewhere in there to hatch. And they seem to need at least brackish water to grow up, if not full strength seawater. But it seems like those who indicate they've had success keep the babies in full strength seawater. Well, not all of them. A lot of them seem to do that. They put them in full strength seawater, and then when the babies reach a certain age, they will move them into brackish water and then eventually to fresh, if that's what they're going to do. They will live perfectly happily in brackish water forever, so you don't need to worry about that. But anyway, that's the kind of the short answer, I guess. We'll put a link up to someone who claims to have bred them and the techniques that person used to do that. But some of the ideas that I get is that you need a lot of algae growing in the tank. It's good not to have strong filtration. Something like a sponge filter would be good, so that you're not getting the veligers, which are the name of the larval nerites, don't get destroyed by like an impeller in a hang-on-the-back filter, something like that. And it also prevents a lot of the suspended particles that they need to eat. You know, they'll eat single-celled algae and things like that, in the water. So if you have too strong a filtration or the type of filtration that remove that from the water, then you're going to, it's counterproductive. Right. So those are a couple of points that might help. Apparently, they take quite a while to grow up. You might not see them until they're quite, you know, they've been several months old. You might not even notice they're there. I have hatched them before in brackish water, kind of by accident, because I tend to keep nerites in a lot of my brackish tanks. I have, you know, 3 or 4 brackish tanks of Opiula shrimp, and the nerites make great algae eaters in those tanks. And I remember once pulling something out. I don't even remember why I did it, but I pulled some of the water from an Opiula tank and put it under a microscope and saw all these creatures wheeling around. And then I looked at them without the microscope, realized I could see them. They were big enough to be able to see, but just very tiny, and realized I had a bunch of veligers that had hatched. But unfortunately, the conditions in which Opiula thrive are not great for the nerites, because they are the water is too clear of nutrients. There's not a whole lot of material that they can eat in the water, so it doesn't really work. They're not compatible that way. You can't breed nerites in a tank that's ideal for Opiula. There you go. But hopefully that gives you some ideas and you can get started.
Okay, we have another email from Sam.
Yes, about sparkling grammies, right?
Sparkling grammies, yeah. He says, I have these beautiful fishes. They have a lot of personality and spunk. They are very hardy and super easy to care for. I did have them with 20 neons and 10 hatchets. Well, long story short, only 3 neons are still alive and looking healthy as ever. I ordered them online at liveaquaria.com. I was disappointed, but maybe it was just fate not to have them. But besides that, on to sparkling grammies. They have a, what can you call it, a pecking order where there's an alpha male and then the other grammies are in different order. The alpha is usually the biggest and most colorful. I do have a picture of the second male, the grammy that is right after the alpha. That would be the beta, I suppose. Mm-hmm. He seeks to be alpha sometimes. When someone challenges the alpha, they start circling, flaring their fins, and start making a small croaking sound. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've, like,
there's
frogs.
Another grammy that's related called a croaking grammy, so that's kind of cool.
It's really cute, actually, to watch them do so. They have a certain spot where they fight. It is a small, flat area surrounded by a small rock barrier. It is right in front of their mountain, or their territory, or as I call it, sparkling mountain. Just give you an idea of them. I think that's really funny. They have an arena.
Yeah, that's cool. And I've often thought that would be fun to have some. They're, you know, diminutive fish. I kind of like diminutive
like
fish. You can keep them in small places, and they tend to have a lot of personality, that whole group, all the endobantoids. And look how he signs it, Sam from Minnesota.
So right next to Jeremiah in Michigan.
And we will put the picture of your Grammy up on the show page.
Okay. And we have Jeremiah now. In yes. Grand Rapids, Michigan, he says, to match Sam, hello again. I wanted to give some follow-up on my last email before I forget. Yes, what I meant by consistency with MRP was referring to the physical consistency or blend. My wife and I are happily a family of two, non-human animals excepted, so the idea of using a baby food spoon would not have occurred to me. I'll have to try it out.
Yeah, so now I get what he meant by consistency. Yeah.
As far as the live substrate for my blue tongue goes, it's a fairly simple mix of happy frog potting soil, which includes fungi cultures and beneficial bacteria, and a mix I got from a reptile breeder. Unfortunately, I've since found out some info about the breeder and can't suggest them as a source in good conscience due to their actions. That is too bad. It seems that not a lot of people in the bluey world use live substrate. What I would suggest is to do a lot of reading up on the care of monitor lizards. Live substrate is practically standard in that sector for quality keepers.
Well, it makes sense that it would be.
Yeah. He says, also for something actually fish-related, I got more tetras, and I plan on getting more!
Hey! And I'm guessing he's saying neon tetras.
Probably.
Probably. I'll look forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
Maybe an update. Maybe he'll do a video.
There we go. So thank you, Jeremiah. And let's go to Mick. Says, hi guys, I've just been doing a little moving around in the fish room as I get ready for an auction next weekend. Don't know what I might get, but I like to have the room ready for impulsiveness.
I like it. That's a cool thing about being a, you know, in the pet store business.
You
can go to auctions
and
you can get things, and things you don't want to keep or can't keep, you can always sell them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I have got a nice group of black bar endlers going at the moment, and so I've moved them into the larger tank. I also moved Russ and Kelly the cichlids into a tank with darker substrate to better accent their colors. And he says, that's colors with a U. Thank you very much, Mick. I like it that way. This reminded me of an unusual thing with a number of groups of Pleiades, guppies, and endlers. In the past, they seem to get to a set number depending on tank space and then really slow up on new fry. I always seem to get bigger groups quicker as I move them into ever larger tanks. Too big a tank at the beginning, though, and they just seem to get lost and not do so well. I was wondering if you or anyone had this kind of self-limiting behavior from other types of fish or creatures.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Your guppies always kind of hit a critical mass in the tank.
Yeah, yeah, and then they would still produce fry, but not very quickly, and the ones that did... You know, they'd eat more of them or whatever happened. In fact, I believe there have been studies on guppy populations, and they, at least this is true with guppies and may or may not be true with other live bearers, is that once they reach a certain population density, a preponderance of males is born, which then effectively curbs the population growth.
Because there's not enough females.
Because the females are the ones that are the limiting factors, because you can have one guppy and 20 females and still all the females will be pregnant, but... You know, you can't produce nearly as many guppies if you have...
Two females.
Yeah. Yeah, you have 18 males and two females. So, that tends to happen. There's also just the general idea that we have environmental resistance, well, that tempers the biotic potential, and that equals the carrying capacity of a particular habitat. So, when you have more guppies, you have more environmental resistance because of the competition for resources, because of... perhaps hormones in the water and different things like that, other things like that can affect the biotic potential of the fish, you know, to be able to reproduce. If there's just not as much food, they're not going to reproduce as much. Even if they're all getting what appears to be ample food and they're still healthy, they're not going to be able to have as much surplus to be able to reproduce as quickly and so on. And I've noticed that in general, when the populations of whatever, you know, guppies being one example, gets higher, that the baby fish also grow more slowly just because they're getting less food.
They just don't get to eat as much.
And not that they'll be growing, you know, not necessarily that they'll be weak or sickly looking or anything like that. It's just they're going to grow a little more slowly. And with fish, that tends to be an advantage because then a fish can just merely slow down and not grow for a while. It has a limited period in which it can do that. But it can slow down and not grow until resources get better, and then it's more likely to survive lean times, and then when food becomes more abundant, it'll grow like crazy. We've had a couple of experiences. One of our bettas was a runt. We kept it with other female bettas, and it was very, very tiny. As soon as we moved it to be by itself, it began to grow extremely quickly. Mm-hmm. It was just, limiting factor was food. It wasn't, for whatever reason, as adept at capturing, you know, food as the other bettas, and as soon as it was in an environment with higher food resources, it grew. So I think that's all related. We also had another poster. I think it was Greg in Jamestown, who's no longer there, Jamestown, California. Mm-hmm. He's somewhere else. But anyway, he said that he had a batch of bettas, and one of them he left in a tank when he moved all the others out. And later he found it, not realizing it had been left in there, and it was huge in comparation to the others after just a few weeks.
Because it hadn't had to compete with them.
Right.
That makes sense.
I think it all relates.
Okay, Mick also says, I'm also in the process of redoing the living room tank, and I'm going to set it up for sailfin mollies. A group of gold and a group of greens. The tank is 4 feet long, so enough swimming space, and I like the idea of seeing fry in the main tank downstairs and watching them grow up.
Hmm, and mollies are one of those live bears that don't eat fry as much as some of the others.
So you actually get to see the babies.
And they're born so much bigger, so.
Says, I will get some pictures when I have the finished product later this week. Best fishes, Mick.
Cool, we'll look forward to seeing that. You've always liked mollies.
I do, I like mollies.
I do, too. Someday I would like to try sailfin mollies, but you do need a large tank. I mean, he's obviously got one.
Yeah.
To do that, do them justice so they grow their fins are nice and big, especially their sails.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's about all for this week, isn't it?
I think that's everything.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and
may the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.